In case you didn't pick up the proverb that they were basing that drama on, it's better to live on the corner of a roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Or a quarrelsome husband, for that matter, I would say. It's not a great picture of marriage, is it? But before all the women here this morning get too annoyed with Proverbs, let me assure you that throughout Proverbs, both men and women are presented as a real mix of good and bad. It's not that wives are the problem in Proverbs, it's that human beings are the problem. Both men and women have their good and their bad. For example, wives are described, let's be fair, in Proverbs, you can't read it without noticing that wives are described sometimes, on rare occasions, very occasionally, as quarrelsome, ill-tempered, wayward, seductive, immoral, and adulterous. But they are also described at other times as prudent, noble, beautiful, a fountain of blessing, a gift from God, and of great value, in fact, worth more than rubies. Husbands are described, and men in general, as jealous at times, on occasions, furious, vengeful, and merciless. That's all in one verse. In fact, most of the teaching of Proverbs suggests that men in general can be, at their worst, on occasions, when they've had a bad day at work, lazy, aimless, adulterous, angry, dishonest, and a whole list of other things. But at their best, husbands are also described as loving, attentive, rejoicing in the wife of their youth. Yeah, that's in Proverbs 5. Look it up, husbands. A husband can be supportive of his wife's activities, complimentary about his wife's gifts, and living with her in complete harmony and trust. That's Proverbs 31. So both men and women are described in Proverbs as a mix of good and bad. It's not that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. It's that both men and women are from Earth, feet of clay. They both have their good and their bad. As human beings, we're capable, on the one hand, of love and of passion and of generosity. And on the other hand, we're both capable at other times of incredible stubbornness, selfishness, sinfulness, and believe it or not, outright stupidity. So let's take the diagnosis of Proverbs on the chin. First, we have to accept that no one is perfect. We're all flawed. And so it's to flawed human beings who potentially marry each other that Proverbs speaks today. And at this starting, and this is the starting point of the first piece of godly wisdom I want to give you today, that the person you marry is not perfect, so don't expect them to be, and you're not perfect. I'm not perfect, and Ginny regularly tells me that. No, she doesn't. Everything might look perfect on the wedding day, but a wedding day is not a marriage. All those flaws will come out eventually. Now, I hope today gives you one or two ideas that will help strengthen your marriage and give you something to work on for the future. At St. Alfred's, for a number of years, we've been running what's called the marriage course to help married couples strengthen their marriages. From looking at the participants' feedback, we've learnt that there's one major area that every married couple finds difficult. That's the area of conflict resolution. You don't have to be married to the quarrelsome wife of Proverbs 25, nor the furious husband of Proverbs 6, to have conflict in a marriage. Just because you're a man and she's a woman will mean there will be conflict. We look at things differently, we feel things differently, and so there will be differences of opinion and different feelings. Every married couple will experience that, and a key to resolving conflict, therefore, is communication and listening. I've invited the leaders of our marriage course, Bev and Graham Churchwood, to come and explain a little bit about conflict resolution and to model what this might look like. Would you welcome Bevan Graham up?
Nikki and Scylla Lee on the marriage course give four principles for handling conflict. The first one is expressing our appreciation of each other, and that I would really emphasise is something that anyone can do right now, is to express your appreciation of the other person. Second one is recognising our differences, and we're all very much aware of our many differences when we look at each other, I'm sure. I'm not going to speak on that right now. The third area is negotiating areas of conflict. And the fourth one is learning to pray together. So they're the four key areas. These principles are not only suitable for married couples. They're actually suitable for any relationship. So you can be single, you can be a parent, child, and you can actually implement some of these principles into your life. When we look at negotiating areas of conflict, the two key important areas are to negotiate rather than attack, surrender, or bargain. To do this, sometimes it's very difficult when you have a huge looming issue between you. And a really helpful analogy that both Graham and I actually find is to picture the three-seater sofa. Okay, one of you sitting down one end and the other person down the other end, and right there in between you is this huge looming issue that actually is a barrier between you. So the key here is to actually grab hold of that issue and put it out there in front of you, and then come together on the couch to actually look at that issue together. So then how do we go about working our way towards peace? We've got that issue out there. What do we do next? Well, the first important thing is to look at the time when you're actually going to negotiate. Better not to do it after 10 o'clock at night. Secondly, it's to actually identify the issue. Sometimes our feelings are so huge and insurmountable that we actually can't see what the real issue is. So identify the issue. And then discuss the issue rather than attack one another. In doing this, avoid labelling. So as a couple, you would never say, "You never bring in the washing," or "You always act like that." They're no-go areas, those two phrases, because you're actually attacking the other person's character. Listen to your partner, and we're actually going to model that in a short moment. Then work out possible solutions, and some people find lists useful for this. So together you're exploring and working out solutions. Decide on the best solution for your relationship. So a best solution for Graham and I might not be a best solution for you. And then it's always be prepared to reevaluate. Okay, you go for it for a while, it might not work. Back to the drawing board, back to our list. Let's work out another solution.
So the key aspect of negotiating areas of conflict is really effective listening. And as a male, when there is a conflict, I tend to want to immediately get into problem solve. There's an easy solution, let's just work through it and fix it. But the biggest thing that I've learned through focusing on the marriage course, etc., is the importance of effective listening and being listened to and being understood. So the principles of effective listening, it's about paying attention without interrupting. It's about putting yourself in your partner's shoes. And I like this quote from Stephen Covey that many of you would have heard. "If I were to summarise in one sentence the single most important principle I have learnt in the field of interpersonal relations, it would be this. Seek first to understand and then to be understood." So that's about putting yourself in your partner's shoes. And the third point, which I think is very difficult for males, acknowledge the feelings that are involved. Reflect back the feelings. Then find out what's most important and then help together to work out what to do as the next step. So now we're going to actually talk about an issue, aren't we? So
my issue, I hope you can see us. It's a bit hard to... My focus is actually going to be on Graham. So, yes. So you'll actually... you guys will actually see his responses and you guys will see mine. So my issue is actually an ongoing issue. And it's about clothing. And some of you who've been on the marriage course previously will have heard some of this before. And first of all, I want to say that you have made some amazing progress over the years on that. however, it all came back to me last January when we were we just grabbed hold of an opportunity. We're in the city, so we were looking specifically for clothes during the sales. And you straight away were very reluctant, and because of our previous conversations, I knew that that would be your response. But you were very obliging in as much as we were able to go into the shop and you were able to buy a couple of shirts, and I even managed to prompt you to buy socks and a few other things, and you actually managed to do that. And really, we accomplished quite a bit. But as soon as I said, "Don't you need some new trousers?" your immediate response was, "No, I've got everything I need. I've got, numerous colours in the wardrobe. I've got, they're all there. I definitely don't need any new trousers." And when I said, "Well, what about for work?" No, I don't need anything for work. So I gave in and we went out. 2 months later, in fact, it could have even been less than 2 months later, you were needing a pair of trousers for something and you came to me and said, "I don't think I've got the particular trousers that you were looking for that particular function. I think I might need to buy some new trousers."
It was the day of the function, as I recall, yeah.
It was the day of the function. In fact, it was probably 2 hours before the function, it's probably an hour. And I felt incredibly exasperated and frustrated because, you know, if you'd put in some forward planning, you would have actually had something. And so I just felt that you didn't listen to my suggestions back then in January. And then finally in June, again when the sales were going and we did actually go to the shops again, I had to put up with your frustrations waiting in long queues for the fitting rooms when we could have actually done this a little bit easier. So that's my issue.
So to summarise all of that, you feel a bit frustrated. First of all, you think I've made lots of progress in terms of, in general.
Don't fall off the end there. Come forward.
But you still feel that you get very frustrated and exasperated when when we compromise, we go to the shops. And as soon as we've got a couple of things, I say, "Right, that's it. I'm out of here. I've done my bit. My wardrobe's full. Thank you." So you still feel frustrated and exasperated. Would that be the feeling that you're portraying?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think you understand my feelings completely. Mm. I think I make them fairly well known.
I agree. So is there anything else you'd like to bring up about the issue, or is this the whole issue?
No, I think I would rather not. I mean, I don't particularly like shopping myself, not for things that are of necessity and things that we need, because it often adds a lot of pressure in that situation. I'd much rather shop for fun. Some of the ladies here would agree with that. And
So what would you like me to do about this issue? I mean, my wardrobe is already full. I've got lots of clothes in there. There's lots of history which I really want to.
Well,
that history is very important to me, and sometimes I think that by getting new clothes, you're going to want to go through the wardrobe and throw out some of my history, and I feel a bit threatened by that.
It's my issue, not yours. I think it would be good, first of all, for you to think about the poor and not depriving the poor of some of the clothing that you have in that wardrobe, but primarily, it would be really good if, you know, if you could actually just together, or even if you could do it by yourself, you could actually just make an honest appraisal of what's in the wardrobe, what is really wearable, how much you've worn it, and when was the last time you wore it, and then sort through the wardrobe in that respect.
That sounds good, except the honest appraisal from you might be different from the honest appraisal from me.
That's true, but I think we could actually negotiate at that point in time.
Okay, so maybe just to bring this to a close, maybe we should agree to have yet another look in my wardrobe.
That would be good.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
I'm sure all the ladies identified with Bev and all the men identified with Graham there. I certainly did. So we need to listen carefully to one another. In Proverbs it says, "He who answers before listening, that's to his folly and his shame." Now, one of the main things that Proverbs tells us that will help us strengthen our marriages is to develop or strengthen our own character and faith. And when I speak of character, I mean the inner qualities, the things that make you the person you are. Proverbs 12:4 says, "A wife of noble character is her husband's crown." Proverbs says a lot about character, things like integrity and honesty and faithfulness and being upright, those sorts of things. And if you develop those types of old-fashioned, almost, virtues, then your spouse will find that they can trust you and you'll provide this sort of atmosphere of reliability that will be a great benefit to both your spouse and your children, should you have them. So the first thing in this area is to look at yourself and not your spouse, and to try and see, in the light of what Proverbs says, am I a person of integrity, uprightness, faithfulness, those sorts of characteristics? We see this exemplified in Proverbs 31 with the so-called wife of noble character, where it says that she is completely trusted by her husband. In chapter 31, verse 11, it says her husband has full confidence in her. He totally trusts her and he praises her in front of other men and is able to leave her to get on with her business and feel totally supported by her. And that's such a great contrast to the wife of Proverbs 7, who is cheating on her husband as soon as his back is turned. Also in verse 12 of chapter 31, it says, "She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life." Just take that little phrase for a moment. And if you're a married person here this morning, think about that phrase. How can I bring good and not harm to my spouse all the days of my life? It's a great little phrase, isn't it? How can I bring good and not harm to my spouse? And one of the ways that Proverbs suggests you do that is by developing your own character, by being honest and trustworthy. Now, Proverbs goes further than this and says it's important for your character and your trustworthiness, etc., to have a proper reverence for God, to have this faith dimension in yourself. And if both the husband and wife have God at the center of the marriage, what that will do is remove their temptation to put themselves at the center of marriage. It comes back a little bit to conflict, that if you think that you're the most important person in this marriage, you will fight and attack and make sure that you win. And if you win, inevitably someone loses. And in this case, it'll be the person you're married to. If, on the other hand, you actually believe God is at the center of our marriage, you will both try and reflect God's character in how you deal with one another. And you have to do that in all the grubbiness of the discussions about clothing, about kids, about washing dishes, about making financial decisions. It's not some sort of super spiritual realm of life that exists somewhere else. Is God at the center of my life, and is God at the center then of our marriage? The fear of the Lord leads to life, says Proverbs 19:23. Then you rest content, untouched by trouble. So as a couple, if you both have this fear of the Lord, you'll be able to rest content. And when trouble comes, as it inevitably does to every married couple and every family, you're able to face that trouble knowing that you both trust God and you will work it out somehow. And that gives great strength to a marriage. So far, we've given you three ideas that will help you marry well and strengthen your marriage. One is to accept that you're both flawed, that you're not perfect, and neither is the person you're married to. Secondly, to learn how to effectively resolve your conflicts and differences. And then thirdly, to work on your own character and faith in God. Bev and Graham are just going to give you another brief practical piece of advice, and this is to do with fun.
Marriage time or date time. It's really important to give time to each other on a regular basis, and that time needs to be fun. So on the marriage course, we talk about perhaps 1 to 2 hours a week, but each couple will find that that varies. During that time of having fun, it's also an opportunity to talk together about your hopes, your fears, those things that are concerning you, to be actually open and honest with one another. And also, it's that opportunity to rekindle romance.
So really, marriage time is about valuing time alone together. We all lead very busy lives with all of our commitments to this place and other activities, et cetera, and with kids. So really, marriage time, it's about planning, you know, actually putting in the diary and saying, right, we're going to do this, and even if the phone call comes and there's some other offer coming up, this is what we're going to do, to prioritise it against other activities and to make sure it actually does happen, to protect it from others. Up on the screen now, we've got a list, and these are lists that have come from people who have done the marriage course with us. There's a whole host of ideas here. Many of them are really good fun ideas. They're not our own ideas. They're ideas from a combination of people here. So they're everything from simple, you know, bike rides, picnics, going out to, you know, the botanical gardens down the peninsula or whatever. And the last few are really simple ones that various people have suggested. Watching a DVD at home together, going down the shops and letting the kids wash the dishes and going around the walking around the block together. So all of those are good fun.
Often there's a problem with young children. How do you have marriage time with young children? And so we've had couples with young children on the course who've said that they actually take it in turns to organise marriage time. They put it in their diary and explain to the children that this is a special time for us. They also might use the opportunity of asking parents to babysit or other good friends. There have been two couples on our marriage course who actually, and I think they still do after a couple of years, they actually take it in turns to babysit each other's children so that as a couple they can have marriage time.
Thanks. Would you thank Bev and Graham? That's terrific. In the Anglican Marriage Service, it says that marriage is a symbol of God's unending love for his people and of the union between Christ and his church. It's a lifelong partnership uniting a woman and a man in heart, mind and body. But as I said at the start, the two people who are united together are not perfect people. They are flawed people. And so my last piece of godly wisdom to you today is to forgive each other your flaws. Not to hold them, you know, not to hold them against each other for too long, if you can, to be kind and gentle to each other and be careful with your words. Proverbs says, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And sometimes in the heat of the moment, we say things that we wish we hadn't said, So please be careful with what you say to each other. If there's anything you need to forgive your spouse, then please try and do that sort of work together. And remember that forgiveness is a decision. It's not a feeling. You can decide to forgive. You can decide to let go. You can decide not to hold it against and not to bring it up in future conversations. Let it go. And that will allow your marriage to blossom again. Forgiveness is another example of how you can bring good and not harm to your spouse all the days of your life. Thank you.